Yeah, I had just dropped the girls off. We walk up to school because they only live about 2 blocks away, and I was on my deck, just made a cup of coffee, and I heard what sounded like gunshots.
School hasn't even begun yet for a wide swath of kids across the United States, and here we are, a shooting. This one in Minneapolis and at a Catholic school where a man opened fire into a mass attended by kindergartners through eighth graders. Kindergartners in freshly pressed new school uniforms, plaid knee-length skirts and crisp white shirts, hiding under pews to escape gunfire. What you're hearing is Father Anders Holin talking to Adam and Jordana at WCCO Radio in Minneapolis. He has two kids at the school, girls who were both lucky to survive. Today's Red Meat will focus on the shooting, the aftermath, questions and answers from experts, survivors, and others all wondering, at the root, the same thing. How do we keep ending up back here?
Drove up there as fast as I could. I was trying to locate where the shots were coming from. I called 911 on the way up. I saw a gentleman at his house, and I said, "Are those gunshots?" And he said, "I don't know." I pulled up to the school, and there was one person in the parking lot, a dad who's a building kind of maintenance manager, and I asked if the school was locked down. He said there's a shooting at the church, and he said all the kids are in the church, and my heart sank. And so I parked quickly, ran up there, and it was just a very chaotic scene. We were trying to figure out where the gunman was. The police were showing up at the same time as I was kind of approaching the entrance to the church. I mean, at that moment, I was only thinking about them. I wanted to get into that church, and I was initially relieved that the police immediately entered. For a second, I'm like, I might have to push these cops in there because I'm not staying out here.
Yeah.
And there was no hesitation on the police. They were in immediately, and I was right beside them, behind them, and I was asking, "Where's the shooter?" And kids were running out. Many were injured. There was a lot of glass, and so I think a lot of kids had these cuts. I saw a few kids down. It was an awful scene, but I was just looking for my daughters. Ran up to the principal, who was in the center of the sanctuary. I asked Arjun and Olive down, and he said no, and I ran out, ushering the kids along with me. It's hard to remember every detail, but it was a chaotic scene.
So did you get to identify your girls, or you just heard from the principal that your two are okay, and that's when you started helping the other kids out? Where were your girls in the mix of all this?
Yeah, I didn't know. And so I was just frantically searching, and I was helping kids out, ushering, like, you know, get it, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I was seeing a couple of my daughter's friends. Have you seen June? Have you seen Olive? Are they safe? And I was able to track down my first grader, Olive, quickly outside the church. My daughter, June, had run to Starbucks with her teacher. And I'm so thankful that the teacher just whisked her out right away once the gunfire started, but it took a couple minutes to find her. She had come back when she saw kids pooling out of the church, and I saw her, you know, maybe 5 minutes later, and the relief washed over me. And I helped kids and the whole group get into the gym at the school, which is maybe 200 feet to the west.
You mentioned something, Anders, when you talked about how when you first heard what you thought were gunshots, and that in your mind you had played that scenario out. Can you just talk about that a little bit, about how you had actually thought about something like this should it happen, and your first reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with this on the news all the time, you know, from Columbine to Sandy Hook to Uvalde. I think it's on every parent's mind that's bringing their young kids to school. And a neighbor and I had met with the school about security. We fundraised to get this 3M bullet-resistant glass installed this summer. And so I thought through what I'd do if this happened.
So you were even proactive. I know you were instrumental in getting that bulletproof film from 3M on the glass, but I guess nobody thought to put it on the stained glass, of course, because that was the church, right?
No, exactly. We just didn't even consider that they do mass once a week, you know, for 1 hour. I never expected that to be a target. I walked up there this morning to see if that glass was applied to the preschool entrance, which is below the church. The shooter had shot out both sides of the preschool entrance. I couldn't tell this morning if the film had stopped him from entering the preschool, but he didn't go in, and thank God he didn't.
Mm-hmm. What was the reunion like with your girls when you finally got to see them?
Oh, I mean, the sickening feeling of not seeing them, I think, will stay with me forever, and the relief was was powerful, but I think the adrenaline was so strong. I just wanted to get out of there, honestly, but we had to go to the gym, and then it was just, I had felt so overwhelmed. I think those emotions were starting to set in that I think my only way to cope was to just try to help these kids out and just focus on the kids, because it was such an intense experience.
Your daughters, June and Olive, is that correct, their names?
Yep.
How are they doing?
They're okay. I mean, they're shaken up. I think both daughter is experiencing this very differently. It was a tough bedtime last night.
Can I interrupt? Because I heard your interview yesterday on TV, and I saw that you reached out actually to a psychologist to ask them what you should tell your kids. Unbelievable thoughtfulness on your part.
Yes.
And what did that person tell you? And I guess how did you approach that last night?
Yeah, my friend John works at Regions as a psychiatrist in the ER. He's in a Bible study with me. I know him well. And I just called him as a friend and as a mental health professional and just said, what do we do today? What do we do tomorrow? How do we process this as a family? He said to just don't go ahead too many days. Just think about today. Try to bring a sense of normalcy if possible and to really model emotional safety. Like if I'm feeling like I want to cry in front of them. If they want to cry, let them cry. Don't try to stuff or push away and just let our emotions be. And that was really good advice because I didn't know how to do that.
What are your emotions right now, 24 hours later, and how do you process as a dad going through those horrific minutes yesterday about what you saw and going forward?
I mean, it's very surreal. It's hard to believe it's reality. I woke up at 5 this morning, and that movie was just replaying in my mind of the events. And a lot of emotion came out today and this morning. And like my friend John said, he just said, let it come. And so I let it come, and it was intense. But it oscillates from kind of numbness to anger to sadness.
Anders, I have received a GoFundMe from another mom at the school. It says, support Sophia and the Forkas family. Recover. Sophia is somebody who was hit. Sophia is a young girl, a student at the school. She was hit. She was in surgery. And Minnesota, the nation is grieving with you, and we want to know how we can help people like Sophia and her family.
I got to tell you, Anders, your principal, Matt DeBoer, I heard his comments yesterday in the afternoon press conference, and it was so touching. And you got a good one there, because he is somebody who really succinctly showed really the emotion of the day and keeping the focus on the kids. And what people who are listening who've consumed this awfulness and want to do something, what's your answer to that? What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, before I jump into that, I just want to say that Matt was such a strong force yesterday.
Amazing.
He was sitting in the middle of that sanctuary. I ran up to him, and he was so helpful, so calm.
Mm-hmm.
The whole day, he was just such a beautiful presence in the chaos. And so he was just such a light. And the gym teacher, Harry Kaiser, he was also such a hero that day. His daughter was wounded. I didn't know that at the time. She's still in the hospital. And so prayers for him and his family.
Absolutely.
I think he had 3 kids in that school. Some have graduated, but I think we're a community of faith, and so we believe in the power of prayer. You know, I'm praying for action, though. I'm praying that our leaders have the courage to face this.
Yep.
And showing up to vigils, you know, not forgetting that this happened. I think the news cycle will continue, but the trauma and the feelings of the day won't go away for so many involved.
More information is coming out about the shooter. 23-year-old Robin Westman, a transgender woman. Law enforcement sources said Westman grew up in Richfield and that Westman's mother was an employee at Annunciation School for several years. Here's Mark Cox at KFTK Radio with more.
It appears that we've obtained the petition to change names and the order granting the petition. This from the shooter back in 2019, changing his legal name from Robert to Robin.
Rose by any other. What in the world? What are we doing here? I mean, this kid's mother, he was a minor when he did this. This kid's mother went in and had his birth certificate changed because that's how he told her he felt.
I have no information to share on a motive other than saying again that there was some sort of manifesto that was timed to come out on YouTube. It's been taken down, and our investigators are going through that to try and develop a motive from that.
Now, I'm not a police officer. I'm certainly not a detective. But, Chief, I just got to say, I think the motive is pretty clear here.
Don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. It was the first week of school. They were in a church. These are kids that should be learning with their friends. They should be playing on the playground. They should be able to go to school or church in peace without the fear or risk of violence, and their parents should have the same kind of assurance.
I would agree with that. That's the Minneapolis mayor, Jacob Fry, there. Maybe if you didn't turn your city into a sanctuary city for people with mental health issues, things like this wouldn't happen. I'm just saying that's a possibility.
There are remarkable similarities. So both were in their 20s, both targeted religious schools that they formerly attended.
Yeah, that is the brain surgeon, Andrew McCabe, the guy that used to be the assistant, the deputy director of the FBI during Operation Crossfire Hurricane and all the investigations into Donald Trump, ran Peter Strzok and his girlfriend who were going to do whatever they could to keep Donald Trump out of office. This is the brain surgeon, Andrew McCabe, right? On why he's still on as a political commentator and not in jail amazes me sometimes. But you have to understand the depth to which the left will go to avoid talking about the elephant in the room in this case. Can I just tell you that? I'm going to let you listen to this. This is probably 35 or 40 seconds of Andrew McCabe talking about the scary similarities between this case and the Nashville shooting. Now, just don't say it out loud, but just think in your mind, what do you think is the biggest similarity between this shooting and what happened at the church school in Nashville 2 years ago? Okay, now that you've got that answer in your mind, listen to Andrew McCabe say everything but that.
There are remarkable similarities. So both were in their 20s, both targeted religious schools that they formerly attended, both brought three weapons to the crime, both purchased those weapons legally, both drove to the attack site and left a vehicle there, both posted manifestos in which they raged and expressed grievance towards numerous ethnic groups and religions, you know, a real broad stroke of kind of anger there. Both sought to kill children, young children specifically. And I think the most important here is both were students of other mass shooters.
I would flunk you out of Detective School 101, Andrew McCabe. You were the deputy director of the FBI. The biggest similarity is that they were both mentally ill and thought they were a different sex than they were born. That's the number one thing these two people had in common. And they were angry at the world for it. Like the police chief saying, I'm not quite sure. We're not sure what the motive was yet, although all of us have seen the video of the guy on the internet with a gun with the words kill Donald Trump on the front of it and the rainbow flag on the side of it. And, you know, 6 million wasn't enough in reference to the Holocaust. He was an anti-Semite. He was clearly deeply mentally ill, in addition to being a trans woman in his mind, and he was angry at the world for not, I guess, bending far enough to his worldview. So he decided he was going to take it out on normal people. That's what happened. And Andrew McCabe says everything but that in his analysis of this situation. This is what you're dealing with. This is what Donald Trump's dealing with, and Kash Patel and a lot of others in trying to clean out the swamp up in Washington, D.C. There's no doubt about that.
It, of course, makes me think about guns and all the work we've done to ban these automatic rifles and to do something when it comes to the background checks and everything, and we keep getting thwarted. We were able to pass a limited measure on a bipartisan basis, but not enough to stop something like this. And it just makes you think about that as well, without knowing the details about how he got the gun, if the gun was legal, what kind of gun it was. But it was clearly one of these automatic rifles to be able to shoot that many kids so fast.
That was Amy Klobuchar, the senator there. I'm sure you recognize the voice, who pivoted immediately yesterday after this tragedy to gun control. I mean, it's an old playbook, and it doesn't seem like that's something that in a state like Minnesota, with some of the tightest gun laws in the nation, would have made a difference here, Shannon.
Well, I mean, the reporting is that the firearms were purchased legally, and so, you know, that part of the conversation brings other questions about this individual. Clearly, they were struggling. If the writings and the things that we've seen are accurately attributed to this individual, they show real worries about violence and all kinds of drawings and journals and things that are very, very frightening. And I think you have to have the mental health part of this conversation. What does the family know? What do others around this person know? Because clearly, even in some of the writings, it looked like they were struggling with some of the thoughts that they were having about knowing that others would not approve. They were hiding these thoughts in these journals, but that has to be part of the conversation, too.
Yeah, that's never really, you know, I was commenting earlier that if you go back to Columbine, go back to Nashville a couple of years ago, we see evidence of the fact that people around these shooters must have known something, but nothing ever seems to get addressed on that front. And I know there are legal issues there, concerned with mental health reporting and all of that. But Shannon, it never seems to be addressed as part of the answer.
Yeah, and I think it has to be, because unfortunately it does put responsibility on those of us around people and in our community, in our homes. I think that's the hardest part. No parent or sibling wants to think that their child is going to be capable of something like this. But it's hard to imagine, like I said, if these writings and journals and drawings and things are accurate and attributed to this person, then it's hard to believe there wouldn't be some part of that that would spill out into conversations or showing frustrations or isolation or antisocial behavior or other kinds of things. It's hard to imagine that these pages full of violent imagery and really frightening statements would not have bled over into the person's personal relationships in some way. So, you know, we all have a knee-jerk reaction when something this horrific happens. We want action. We don't want this to keep happening. We don't want repeats of this. So it's understandable that everybody's looking for some kind of solution that would shut this down. But people are clearly looking at different things as the cause, and immediately getting defensive about some things when it feels like they have to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's very true. We're talking to Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday. Muriel Bowser surprised me a little bit yesterday when she said this.
And we greatly appreciate the surge of officers that enhance what MPD has been able to do in this city.
And she went on to say, carjackings are down 88% or 89%, like a 90% drop, and how much people in the neighborhoods appreciate that. Well, I mean, isn't she admitting that what President Trump here has kind of done is give other big city mayors a blueprint of how to do the same thing?
Yeah, well, I don't think that most of them are going to be welcoming to additional federal troops or National Guard. I mean, therein lies the problem, because I got to say, as somebody who lives and works in D.C., I appreciate that it feels calmer that I can walk into Union Station without some of the worries that I had a couple of weeks ago, and I'm in and out of there a lot at all hours of the day and night. It is a different feel. Now, how long can you maintain this extra surge of federal officers into these places? That's going to be a question that Congress is going to get involved with some of that when they come back from their August recess. But already these other cities are pledging and vowing lawsuits that they will fight back. I think that Bowser is playing this very wisely and carefully. She wants to praise the president where it's been helpful, but she's also trying to draw a line and saying, hey, we are an independent, autonomous operation here, and we don't like National Guard, and we don't want masked ICE agents. But she's acknowledging you can't dispute the statistics. It is measurably made a difference for the better.
It's like Brandon Johnson coming out and admitting, yeah, we see that it's working, but we'd prefer to have 600 murders a year here in Chicago. I mean, it's almost that ridiculous.
Right, and it's putting Democrats on shaky ground with this argument that the president is very well aware of, and he's happy to have them make it, that they don't want to be, at least the view is, well, they don't want to help you with this scary crime that's making your neighborhoods terrible.
That's very true.
My friend got hit in the back.
Did he go to the hospital?
Yeah, he went to the hospital.
What went through your mind when you saw that?
I was super scared for him, but I think now he's okay.
The gunfire breaking out at Annunciation, an 8 and 10-year-old were killed, 17 others hurt, 3 older adults part of that, some of them very critically injured. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey speaking to CBS Mornings this morning, questioning the need for some of the weapons that were used as part of the shooting yesterday and the easy access to those weapons.
Why should you have the ability not just to reel off a bullet, but spray a heap ton of them all at once? Or have a magazine clip worth of even more bullets? Why do you need that? You're not killing deer or ducks with an assault rifle like that.
The shooter, identified as 23-year-old Robin Westman, purchased the guns legally and had a pistol, a rifle, and a shotgun. He apparently used all 3, according to police. The motive still not known, but Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara says that Robin left a video manifesto posted on social media.
This manifesto appeared to show him at the scene and included some disturbing writings. That content has since been taken down with the assistance of the FBI, and it now remains under active review by our investigators.
Investigators converged on several different homes in Minneapolis associated with Westman, including a house at 57th and 1st Avenue South.
Armed personnel have been seen going into the house and scouring the lawn. There was a van and 2 police squads outside of the house. One neighbor said she knew Robin's stepmom and that her son knew Robin and said, quote, he was a really nice guy. So she's completely shocked at this situation.
Yes, this has been a horrible day all around for everyone.
So there was no motive. Really? Manifesto, videos, words on the gun, planning. But everyone's so confused about why Robin pulled the trigger. Here's Tara Servatius from WORD Radio.
Oh, the pattern is always the same. Never ends, never changes. Police chief, Minneapolis Democrat, comes out and says, we just don't know. So confusing as to what might have caused this. He's repeating every Democrat talking point of the last 6 months and calls himself woke. But other than that, we don't know what it means. But, you know, we'll get back to you in 6 months when we figure it out. Super duper confused. We have no motive. The mayor comes out, Minneapolis, Democrat mayor, stop attacking transgenderism. He mentions that before he mentions the kids who are literally dead. Their blood still in that church, just feet away. The transgender shooter literally posts videos showing how much he hates Christians. Another Democrat talking point, they hate Christians. That's why they debanked so many Christian organizations under Joe Biden. They hate you. They do. Let's not kid ourselves. But what could have caused this? Let's see, repeats every talking point from the Democrat Party, calls himself woke like they do, displays the same flag that they do, instead of the American flag, by the way. Don't know, we'll never get to the bottom of it. Never get to the bottom. You know what's so interesting? Do you see what he did? He obviously studied, and this is a copycat crime of the Audrey Hale shooting, because she was she became such a folk hero after she killed those kids, to the Democrats in all the ways I described in the last segment. Joe Biden set this up practically. First ever Trans Day of Visibility, celebrated instead of Easter at the White House within 3 days of the Audrey Hale shooting. And Joe Biden never called the parents. Never did. Made her into a folk hero. He was copying it. It's So what he was doing, he was copying it with all the right Democrat woke talking points. He wants to be a folk hero too. He even added in killing Donald Trump because it's very popular on the left. No, it is. I mean, I've read the survey. 30% of the Democrat Party is like, yeah, we'd be better off if he was dead. It's who they are. It's who they are. So you've got all the usual cleanup, but folks, the talking point. Jacob Frey, it hasn't even been an hour, and Jacob Frey, Democrat Minneapolis mayor, shoves everyone to the side at the press conference, comes forward, and uses the phrase thoughts and prayers.
Don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. It was the first week of school. They were in a church. These are kids that should be learning with their friends. They should be playing on the playground.
Yeah, we have to do more, he says. Now listen to this. MSNBC, same exact phrase.
I'm not, the thoughts and prayers, I'm so beyond that. That nonsense, the lie of that, because what we have are people who continue to stand in the way of actually doing something.
He means taking the guns. He means taking the guns. Circleback Shockey, spokeshack for Joe Biden. Same exact phrase. We don't need your thoughts and prayers. Rawr. What is she saying? Prayer is not freaking enough. Prayers do not end school shooting. Enough with the thoughts and prayers. We need action. What's action? Well, they can't even say it now. This is the funny part. They are so beaten on the gun issue, they can't say it. What they mean? We need your guns. We want your guns. That's what she means. You know what's ironic about that? They can't say it anymore because so many Democrats own guns now. And remember the number one, during the Biden era, number one first-time gun owner for the first time used to be males. Now it's black females. Why? Well, because you're living with the consequences of Democrat policies. You can't do that without a gun. You need a gun. So when Democrats say prayer's not enough, they mean they want to confiscate our guns. They just can't say that because so many of the Democrat Party's voters have had to buy guns to protect themselves from the violent criminals thanks to Democrat policies. So now they have to low-key hint at it.
Here's Chad Hartman from WCCO on the latest in the shooting.
Blair Anderson, the former St. Cloud police chief, is with us. Blair, during his time in police, sadly was a part of investigating too many mass shootings, whether it was early on or was running very efficiently and very effectively the police force in St. Cloud. And Blair is with us. When you first found out about this, Blair, what was your immediate reaction?
Chad, can you hear me okay?
I got you fine, Blair. Loud and clear.
Heartbroken. Tears streaming down my eyes. Well, we are to the point now where we can't send our babies to school for masks without them getting shot, man. In my heart and prayers and sympathies go out to the families of everybody involved, Chad. But, yeah, my initial reaction was just sheer heartbreak. Just an ugly, evil day.
What are we going to do to stop it?
Chad, I need an easier question.
Yep.
And I'm sure that we'll learn more about this person as the investigation continues. But one of the things, and, you know, you get into trouble when you say this kind of thing, is that what do regular citizens need semi-automatic weapons for? And, you know, if we figure out a way for them not to get them, they'll still figure out a way to get them illegally. But this goes deeper than that. You know that. We've been through this so many times.
Yep.
Throughout our country. And so, man, Chad, I wish I had the answer. Again, like I say before, I'd give it away for free if I knew the answer.
I just don't think we're going to do anything, Blair. We just had Amy Klobuchar on talking about, you know, bills and... I don't mean this as a slight to Donald Trump in any way. This person was threatening to kill Donald Trump, okay?
My point was with Amy Klobuchar that if the president, considering the powers he has within the Republican Party, if the president said, I wanted to get something done, he could. Now, you know, and by the way, that wouldn't stop everything. Nothing is going to stop everything. But let's go to the mental health part, right? Because this individual had this manifesto-like grievances, threatening to kill the president, not wanting an apology, a video showing the guns. On the mental health part, and on when we find out afterwards through good police work about what this person was all about, and then we want to still give people the presumption of innocence and reasonable doubt, what can we do in that area?
Well, this is the part that's troubling to me, because honestly, it's getting stale and it's getting old, and I don't mean to besmirch or belittle anybody who is suffering through a mental health crisis. I've done extensive work with NAMI and a whole bunch of other institutions that help the mentally ill. But I don't know, Chad, that we haven't gotten complacent with just kind of passing it off and saying, well, this person's in a mental health crisis. Well, then somebody that knows that person or is close to that person would know that. You would hope that they would know that. And so ring the bell, right? And I don't know that his family members didn't, because I don't know as much as you do right now. But, Chad, I swear, I don't know. I need an easier question. But it's going to have to start with, and I am not a – I'm not a gun fanatic. I have firearms being a retired police officer, but it is not a fascination for me. I have them for protection like a lot of people. But, this whole idea of anybody can just go and buy whatever they want, you know, without impunity, if you will, is troubling to me because this is what it leads to. I wouldn't be shocked at all, and you know more than I do, if this person didn't buy all the firearms that were used today legally. And so that's a huge problem to me.
For the individual who hears this, and this is Blair Anderson, former St. Cloud police chief, who says, wait a second, you're trying to make it harder for legal citizens who have committed no crimes, and it's going to be tougher for us to get guns, and the individuals who have a crime record and rap sheet already, it's not going to stop them from getting guns. What do you say to them?
I say it's incumbent upon us, seriously, as corny as this sounds, as citizens, to rattle our sabers to our elected officials. Chad, let me take you back to a gun summit we had here probably 10 or 15 years ago. And I learned about something called the Tehart Amendment. And the Tehart Amendment was something that was put on a congressional bill as a rider that precluded federal law enforcement agencies with sharing information with local law enforcement agencies about people who bought guns. Those are the kinds of things, in my opinion, where we need to start, okay? Because the average citizen wouldn't know anything about that, nor should they. But why in the world would we be precluded from sharing information with one another as law enforcement agencies about who purchases guns and where they purchase them? So, again, I'm not against people exercising their Second Amendment rights, but you know what gets left out, Chad? Is that second part of that clause, right? We have the right to be armed against a militia.
Yeah, right.
And not just because we feel like it or for recreation or for pleasure. I don't remember seeing that anywhere in that clause.
Well, and here's another thing about that, Blair. You know this well. We have made adjustments to our Constitution over and over and over again. And now, no matter how brilliant you view our founding fathers, and I'm glad I'm in this country, I know you're glad you're in this country too, they couldn't have predicted everything. Nobody in the 1700s could have predicted precisely what's happening in 2025.
So when somebody right. says, don't touch my amendment, then I can ask him about two or other certain clauses or the basic dominant purpose of another amendment. They'll say, oh, yeah, we should adjust that. They're cherry picking that part of the pushback.
Agreed. And so let me just take a hard left on you as well. I heard a 10-year-old boy being interviewed after this shooting with the permission of his grandfather.
Yep.
And that was troubling to me, not because his grandfather let him be interviewed, but because of how desensitized he appeared to be. And I believe he mentioned that it was like watching a video game. So let's go there. Let's go there. We are upon what our second generation of kids who grew up with video games. And sometimes this stuff is not real for them until it happens. And again, I don't mean to minimize any of this stuff, but we got to get a handle on a whole bunch of stuff when it comes to our kids and what they're exposed to before they become adults and start committing heinous crimes like this. Because I will bet you a month's salary that this is a person who grew up playing video games and is desensitized and all the other things that go into this right now. Yes, we do. But here's the problem that's going to come with that. People don't want to feel like they're being occupied. And I'll give you a quick example. When we were having some trouble in St. Cloud when I was there, I promised them I can put officers on every corner if you want, if you feel unsafe in this neighborhood. And we had a community meeting, and to a person, they said, no, that is not what we want. And so we as law enforcement have to become more and more creative to try and figure this out, because people don't want to feel like they're occupied. However, you got a bunch of soft targets. And that's a whole nother show,
yeah.
Chad.
We'll follow up on that.
Get school districts and soft targets and people to comply and let us do what we know how to do. But I can tell you that the average citizen doesn't want that either. And so we're left with our hands tied and we have to be reactive instead of proactive.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.